Welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. A quick reminder, apropos nothing, you only have a few days until January the 31st to get your tax return in. joining me is my co-host, who also kindly decided to secure an £800,000 loan for me, which is really nice of her. Hi, Emma. Thank you for doing that.
Oh, you know, it's a drop in the ocean, Charlotte.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. No, I know. High earning theatre connoisseur like yourself, the superstar of
there's theatre. So much money in fringe theatre, you just wouldn't believe
I appreciate it. It's made a big difference. But yeah, look, we're joking, of course. There's a lot to be going on within the world of sleaze. And whatever way you cut it, whoever you think is in the right, in the wrong, whoever you might have some sympathy for, whoever you think might have been a bit stitched up, between Nadeem Zahawi, Boris Johnson, some of Rishi Sunak's answers, Dominic Raab being under investigation, the whole thing is a complete mess. So let's break down each case. Dominic Raab has been rumbling on for a while, and that's nothing financial. That's to do with accusations of bullying. Now, of course, there's an investigation underway, and I think it's reasonable that there is due process in these things. We don't know what the outcome is going to be, but he's the Deputy Prime Minister and this is a pretty uncomfortable situation. You know, he may be fully exonerated. We don't know what's going to come out of this, but it's a pretty uncomfortable situation for him to be investigated like this, I would say. That's senior.
And it's been going on for a really long time.
Precisely.
It feels like it's been forever. And of course, as long as it's going on, he can't go out on the airwaves and be an attack dog because he can't look like that guy.
Yeah. No, it has a real impact on how he can be used publicly, what he can say, how people can refer to him and use him. Yeah, it's a mess. It's gone on. It's basically been going on since Rishi Sunak became Prime Minister, really, didn't it? That started pretty early.
Yeah. Well, there was Gavin Williamson, who was similar accusations and in the end had to step down. And then
That was right at the beginning, wasn't it?
That's right at the beginning. And then it moved almost seamlessly to Dominic Raab.
And we don't know the outcomes of that yet.
We don't know the outcome of that yet, but it's been rumbling on and on and on and on and on. And it just feels like, hey, here's some long grass. Let's throw it into there.
Yes, you're right. But also, as you also rightly say, it's not actually helping anyone for it to be buried in the long grass. It keeps him in government, but it doesn't allow him to do all the things you might want your Deputy Prime Minister to do if he's stuck under this kind of cloud. This is an expression I think we're going to use quite a lot today. It's all a bit of a mess.
It's a shamble. It's shambolic.
Yeah. And then, of course, we'll deal with Boris Johnson and the BBC in a bit. But the thing that has been dominating the news, well, it's nearly 2 weeks now, isn't it? It's been a long, long time going.
It started very slowly and quietly. There was, like, the initial story is, why isn't everyone
We're talking about Nadeem Zahawi, of course.
Yeah.
And his tax affairs. And yes, you're right. It started off slowly. Someone digging into a guy called Dan Needle really started it, didn't he? Looking into these issues.
Well, he started, apparently quite some time ago, he was asking questions, I think summer last year, about Nadeem Zahawi's tax affairs of Nadeem Zahawi. And I think one of the nastiest elements of this story was that instead of Nadeem Zahawi giving him an answer, he set the lawyers on him, which is an absolute disgrace. And may well be, whether or not it turns out his tax affairs are just carelessness, that was a breaking, I think, a fairly clear breaking of the ministerial code.
I can't confess to be an expert in the ministerial code, but it does come across as rather nasty.
He's supposed to take any type of legal action through the Attorney General. Now, he didn't actually end up suing, but I think a threat of suing should have gone further than him and his lawyers.
And it's just a very... maybe bullying is too strong, maybe it's not actually. It's just a very nasty way to behave in response to fairly legitimate investigative journalism, I would say.
It's part of the wider story on Slap and the misuse of legal process.
Explain that just for our listeners who might not know.
I can't remember exactly what it stands for, but it's about pernicious lawsuits that are literally just there to try and shut people up rather than actually having any valid merit. And the idea is that you are so nervous about the cost of any lawsuit, whether you're likely to win it or not, that you don't pursue the story.
And let's be clear, that's a very real thing, particularly in independent or smaller journalism. That's a real, real scary thing to get a lawyer's letter from a fancy law firm. That's scary. When, of course, and again, this is a bit of a running theme through these stories, you could just answer the question straight. Now, the new Nadeem Zahawi has sort of got himself into a mess here. Because one of the things that I find most troubling about this story is his tax affairs seem to have been resolved, from what we understand, in the few weeks he was the Chancellor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that
now,
is really
first
worrying.
Of all, I
charge the country's taxes and then be negotiating with HMRC yourself to try and diminish your own mistakes.
Well, especially when the public don't know about it. I think that's quite. Look, I think everything is so murky, we don't actually necessarily know all the time frames, but that does seem to appear part of what's gone on here and be an element to the story that I find particularly uncomfortable. I mean, I was pretty furious at Nadeem Zahawi for tackling the chancellorship, because had he not done so, that would have been the end of Boris Johnson much quicker. And his taking that chancellorship did keep the show on the road a little bit longer than it needed to. So I thought that was a pretty poor decision on his part. Just as an aside, before we dig back into the story, I find the kind of fall from grace of Nadeem Zahawi quite fascinating. At the height of the vaccine rollout, he was, and quite rightly in my opinion, deemed a very successful minister who had executed this really important thing really well. He's now just got himself in all sorts of twists and turns. I suspect this story is only ending one way, and that is with his exit from the cabinet.
And that's what everyone in Westminster seems to think, Tory or Labour. You know, they're all like, Nadeem Zahawi's going to go. I tweeted that the thing about this story that's interesting is Labour would kind of like him to stay in post, because he can't do the job of Tory chairman, most of which is being the minister for going on the Today programme and defending the government.
Well, there's two elements to it, isn't there? One is absolutely right, the minister for the Today programme. And two, it's the minister for campaigning and getting my troops out in May, where we might get absolutely annihilated at the local elections.
Yeah, and he can't do either. So Labour would frankly prefer him to stay in post, because it's a bad look for the Tories. The Tories desperately want to get rid of him, but are finding it very hard to do so while Labour are calling for it.
Yeah, let's talk about Labour calling for his resignation, because I'm a bit conflicted on this, and I'll tell you why. You can tell me why I'm wrong.
So when you are.
No, hear me out. So Dominic Raab, we sort of understand why there's a matter of due process. Now, I can understand why Nadeem Zahawi might have gone, I need to sort this out privately, I'm going to step away from the cabinet. Quite right. I do find it slightly humorous for Sir Keir Starmer KC to be asking for some summary kind of dismissal of someone without the due process.
I don't get this. He's not a lawyer anymore. He's a politician, and he's behaving like a politician, quite rightly. That's his new job. It's like me, someone saying to me, why aren't you still trying to make 40 phone calls selling chemicals a day? Well, because that's not my job anymore.
You know what I'm getting at, though. I mean, politically, I guess it is expedient to get rid of him. I always have on the side of due process. However, I think... If I were Rishi Sunak, I'd be, and apparently according to reports, he is absolutely furious about this. And I don't blame him. I was going to say I feel sympathy for Rishi Sunak, but I don't quite feel like that, because when you're the Prime Minister, you know what you're getting into. I have
his team have messed this up at every step. He should have shown strength and just gone, you know what, mate, step down. If it turns out it's all a big nothing burger, we'll give you another job in a year.
I think that probably would have been the best solution. I think you're right. And there's also, if you do it early, there's a perfectly coherent way Nadeem Zahawi can say, I need to sort out my personal affairs. I hope to be able to return to government and contribute in the near future.
Whereas what he's doing now is burning through his capital with the people in charge of the Tory party, burning through the Tory party's reputation, and making Rishi Sunak look weak and weak and weak. And, you know, that's the biggest attack line on Rishi Sunak. So yeah, there's no good.
No, it's hugely damaging. Nadeem Zahawi, I think, has played it badly. I agree with you to quite a large extent that the Downing Street team have got played it badly. And this is just, you know, it is not going to go away, and probably until either Nadeem Zahawi is exonerated, which doesn't seem to happen because he has paid this penalty. Let me just quote for you, actually. This was part of a story. I think it came from the Telegraph. I took the screenshot of this Telegraph story, reporting on Jim Hara, the chief executive of HMRC, talking to the MPs on the Public Accounts Committee.
And making a very deliberate statement.
Yes, let's read it. I'm going to read it verbatim so that I don't mess it up. He said, "I am not commenting on any particular person's affairs, but carelessness is a concept in tax law. It can be relevant to how many back years that we can assess, and it could be relevant to whether someone is liable to a penalty, and if so, what penalty they will be liable for an error in their tax affairs." Okay. He then went on to say, "There are no penalties for innocent errors in your tax affairs. So if you take reasonable care, but nevertheless make a mistake, whilst you will be liable for the tax and for interest if it's paid late, you will not be liable for a penalty. But if your error was as a result of carelessness, then legislation says that that a penalty could apply in those circumstances."
Yeah, so that's quite clear the direction that he's pushing the narrative in there, however much he says he's not commenting on an individual case.
Just hypothetically, let's give Nadeem Zahawi the biggest benefit of the doubt possible. And this was a careless error because he's such a busy man and this stuff happens. It is such a bad look to have been careless with £3.7 million.
I mean, you know, these are sums of money most of us can't even dream of having in one go. Never mind owing, never mind forgetting about.
Correct. And I think given the current financial circumstances, if nothing else, that is just a terrible look. I mean, I paid my tax return the other day. You'll be surprised to know, A, I neurotically checked it and didn't forget to pay it. And B, it was nowhere near £3.7 million. So, the idea that you can mess this up is, I don't quite get it. There are innocent ways you can mess up your tax return. People every year go, "Oh my God, it's February the 2nd. I haven't filed my self-assessment tax return. Damn it, that's going to cost me £100. And the guy who started the story, as we said, Dan Needle, did, and we'll come on to this, did tweet, "Maybe don't ask every politician if they've ever had a penalty, because an £100 penalty for forgetting to file your tax return is a nothing." Again, that is not what we're talking about here. And we should be very clear about making a distinction with those things, shouldn't we?
Yes, we should. But honestly, I'm a comms person. And the fact is, every single Tory politician is going to be asked this question, and they've got to have a better answer. Because they, at the moment, you know, all I'm seeing over and over again is ex-Tory politician refuses to answer a question about whether they've ever been fined by HMRC. And that's just not going to hold.
No, I said to you before.
And it's not going to stop asking that question.
No, So I tweeted, I got a bit of a pushback on this, and you didn't like it when I made this point earlier when we were just planning the show. I don't think depending on who it is and depending on the circumstances, I'm not sure it's a great question. I think it's a great question if you've done the investigating and you know the answer and you want to get the person on record first. I think that is a great question. I think if it's a bit of a fishing expedition, you get one tweet out of it and a quick story, and okay, Jeremy Hunt fudged it around a bit. But you're absolutely right that from a communications perspective, the Tory party press office, the SPADs working with the senior ministers on comms, are going to have to come up with something better than my tax affairs are private. They just are now.
Yeah, and I'm sorry.
Whether I like it or not, that's the reality, isn't it?
That every journalist is going to ask this question, and it's going to keep coming up. And the more that they fudge and obfuscate, rather than say, yeah, I once filed my tax return late, I had to pay £100, everyone would go, oh, okay, that's fine. The more they obfuscate, the more it looks bigger. It looks like they probably owed billions now to HMRC.
I think probably at this stage you're right about that. And whether I like the question or not, or whether I think it's of value or not, that is the reality. And a communications operation is going to have to sort that. I mean, the worst example of this was Rishi Sunak the other day, who got asked it. The spokesperson got asked it by the lobby, the lobby within, the parliamentary press corps, was asked this. Basically, the spokesman said the prime minister's tax affairs are private. Then we got all the stories of, Rishi Sunak didn't answer this, or Rishi Sunak spokesman didn't answer the question.
Also now is the space to go back to. Oh, and remember the fact that his wife used to be a num-dom. So it's just allowing those stories to come back and rumble on. And the sense of the Tories as these, and not just sense, reality. I read somewhere that the Tory cabinet now is worth something like 100 times, has wealth something like 100 times of what the Tory cabinet had 10 years ago. So David Cameron's cabinet had a combined wealth of around 70 million, which is still pretty bloody high. This cabinet has a combined wealth of around 700 million. So that out of touch sense is just going to keep coming with these questions.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Sir Keir Starmer and co are particularly languishing on the poverty line, but I understand the point you're making.
I suspect Andy Rayner ain't worth whatever the division of the cabinet would be between 700 million.
Maybe. I would also say, look, if people have been successful in private life and then gone into politics, it doesn't particularly bother me. But you do, if you are in that position, you must make sure you look in touch, even if you're very well off. That's very, very important. You have to work doubly hard.
People being filthy rich as long as they pay their taxes. Fine. Pay your bloody taxes and talk about it openly.
And also from a political perspective, you do have to look in touch and you have to make an extra effort if people know that you're very wealthy. The point I was just going to finish making about Rishi Sunak and his spokesman is they got in this tangle for no reason. The answer was no. The spokesperson came back a few hours later and said, no, nothing to see here. There's never been any penalty to Rishi Sunak. Okay, great. That's fine. Everyone move on. And I think actually Rishi Sunak would also publish his tax return.
They said that since he got elected and has not yet done it.
Not yet done it. But again, that point was reiterated.
And how long does it take? My tax return is one document. I could publish it in seconds.
Well, I suspect his is somewhat denser than ours.
If he's done it and he says he's never been fined, so presumably he's done it, why isn't it just there to be published?
Yeah, I don't know. I understand the sort of objection to making your personal finances public, but equally...
He's already said he's going to do it.
But
so
he
that
said
objection
he's
going to
do it. Yeah.
They said they're going to do it. Don't say you're going to do it and then not do it.
And also, like in the US, this kind of stuff is fairly standard, isn't it?
I mean, I think Donald Trump was the first modern president not to publish his tax returns.
Right.
And then look where that went.
And look, and the stuff around like making your health records public, all that stuff, like they're much more, that stuff gets much more published in America, doesn't it? So anyway, that was one sort of thing looming. And we do have to come back to Boris Johnson as well, who did manage to turn up in Kyiv again. Well, it was just outside Kyiv, wasn't it? It was a different...
It's a joke now. Every time there's a bad headline about Boris, off he pops to Ukraine. He must have frequent flyer miles by now.
I genuinely feel quite... I don't... Like, I was very proud when he was Prime Minister that he led kind of...
Praised him all the way.
Right, exactly, exactly.
But he's not the Prime Minister anymore.
Yep. He's not the Prime Minister... And also, it's not really right. I mean, it is absolutely not right to use the Ukrainian people and their struggle as a PR exercise. Anyway, let's deal with actually what this story is. And I've kept using the word messy this show, isn't it? But that's the only way to describe these things. This amazing story. Shambolic also works. Yep, absolutely. Shambolic works because the chairman of the BBC board is, it is claimed, helped facilitate an £800,000 loan, a guarantor of an £800,000 loan for Boris Johnson.
Over dinner at Chequers.
Now, they say they didn't discuss it at that particular Chequers meeting. I'm just repeating what they say. Now, I should also say Richard Sharpe is the person we talk about. He was not in position when these conversations happened. Simon Case, the cabinet secretary, seems to have been dragged into this. And anyway, and then
having to insert himself into all of these stories. I'm not sure dragged is the right word.
Yeah, I mean, he does seem to pop up really in places where you would think the cabinet secretary should be shutting things down, not being part of it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which, as I say, Richard Sharpe did not have this, was not appointed to the BBC board as the chairman before this. This sort of loan guarantee happened. He then put in his application, as we understand, not declaring what this relationship had been. Yeah. And was appointed to this very high profile, pretty well paid job.
Then, of course, inserted himself into areas of that job that had previously been none of the chairs of the boards, including appointing the head of news, which I think is a really bad story.
I want to talk about that very seriously in a minute. Let's deal with the money first. Well, actually, I don't want to talk about the money first. I want to talk about how Boris Johnson somehow seems to contaminate
everything.
Everything around him. Like, you know, he's left all
is
sorts
for Richard. Who's had a political relationship with Boris Johnson that it hasn't tarnished them?
I don't think so. You could maybe try to make it. I was going to try and make the case for Rishi Sunak, but no, he ended up with a lockdown fixed penalty notice. I was going to try and find some people to make a case for, but it's pretty difficult. He does seem to have this sort of contamination effect on everyone. You know, we don't know. Richard Sharpe may be a perfectly qualified person for this role, but I know nothing of him. But this association with Boris Johnson puts a huge, huge cloud over all of that, doesn't it?
It does. And he went in there saying we're going to be all about impartiality. Yeah. But he cannot be seen as impartial after this. It's just really hard. And I think part of the problem is that the concept of impartiality has been reclaimed by a certain section of the right to mean you aren't talking about how brilliant Brexit is enough.
Well, don't worry, Emma. Next week, 3 years on, we're going to spend the whole show talking about how fantastic Brexit is. So listeners, tune in for that. You can imagine how many praising things Emma and I are going to have to say about Brexit. So that's next Friday. But yes, this thing about impartiality puts him in a bind. Look, let's be honest. I think this point was made on the News Agents podcast, who also revealed, as you say, that Richard Sharpe seemed to have sat in on the recruitment process for the head of news, which is really not what the chairman of the BBC board is meant to do at all, or traditionally never did. But they made the point on the News Agents that, look, whoever is in power tends to have a few more of their people at the top of the BBC. That's just kind of how it is.
Fairly standard, but those people, be they Greg Dyke or Chris Patten, Tory appointed, Labour appointed, they were scrupulous in their attempt not just be impartial, but be seen as being impartial.
Yes. Chris Chat Patten was the chairman of the Conservative Party. If you hadn't known that about him, but knew about the BBC, as you say, scrupulous is exactly the word. Like, they were completely... Greg Dyke, again, had appointed to a number of senior positions really took that seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that taking it seriously point is really worth unpacking, because I think that is part of the real problems that Boris came to exemplify, but Rishi Sunak is not sorting out. There is a sense that for a certain strand of conservatives, And I don't want to say this about the whole party, but the whole party is tarnished by it at the moment. They do not take propriety seriously. Mm. And they elected Boris knowing who, exactly who he was.
Well, elected him because of who he was in lots of ways.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they then go on to really try to game the system over and over again in so many different ways. You know, we're looking at, so, I mean, for everything from Michelle Moan to Richard Sharp.
These are, that's these quite are, a jump.
These are people, no, but I think that what they have in common is that they see the system as for them, not for us. And they don't see their role in the system as being a sensible manager of it, but an extractor from it. And that is a problem.
Yeah, my objection to it all is that it just so all tarnishes public life, doesn't it? It yeah. just makes
yeah,
everyone...
exactly. And it ends up with that, oh, they're all the same. Well, yes. They're not all the same. And your line about the Labour cabinet, the idea that there's £700 million floating around in the coffers of the Labour cabinet is bullshit. Yeah,
well, we don't know, but
they are not all the same. And I think it's really damaging public life when it becomes that sense that they're all the same and they're all got their noses in the trough.
So I absolutely think it's a really damaging thing if people just think everyone involved in public life is just in it for themselves, just wants to line their own pockets, just wants to manipulate the system so they have influence. It just ends up with really, I mean, it just has disastrous societal consequences. If people no longer have faith in the people, like, we should all hold the people to account to a top every single day, rigorously. And that should, in return, make them feel us feel that, like, people with power and influence are using it to try and better the country, better our lives, whatever way you want to put it. And you and I have both met more than enough people in politics to know that people go into it for of whatever party, go into it.
For I was just thinking before we started recording about Caroline Noakes. I don't agree with Caroline Noakes on an awful lot of things, but I think she's in politics for all the right reasons.
Right. And there are lots of people we could pick across all parties who got into politics because they want to do good things, at least good. And even if that is good things as they perceive it, they're going in for sincere reasons. And if you have these just drip, drip, drip of stories, it just damages all of that. And it doesn't leave the country in a good place. And, you know, I think that is, I mean, if that's, you know, in many ways that could be Boris Johnson's legacy of just people feeling like that again. And what is so bizarre actually is Boris Johnson did a really good job of playing that part of sort of everyone knew he was a posh public school boy with lots of money. We haven't even discussed why Boris Johnson might...
not that much money, because he has to borrow it off everyone.
There's a story today about him making £1 million in 6 weeks or something. Anyway, I don't really understand why Boris... Another book, yeah. I don't really understand why Boris Johnson needed an £800,000 loan when he was in Downing Street.
How many kids anyway, has he got?
Emma. Please send the lawyer's letters to Emma, not me.
just asking a perfectly valid question.
Just
not
send the lawyers. We'll put Emma's address in the show notes. You can send the letters to her. But my point is, he did this balancing act that was quite extraordinary. Of everyone knew he was a posh public school boy that had a lot of money and had grown up in a posh family and all the rest of it. And he also managed to come across as kind of just a normal person or a person that could engage in normal people. And that's how the Red Wall stuff happened and everything. And this just shatters all of it, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think anyone's surprised by Boris anymore. But I think what is taking some people by surprise is how bad everything else is.
But
how much
stem-
of this is
yeah.
beyond Boris. And how much Boris's spider webbing has really gripped everything.
As I say, I wouldn't say I feel sorry for Rishi Sunak because he knew what he was getting into. but he must be just want everyone to shut up and go away for a few weeks so he can, he and Jeremy Hunt can get on with doing what they need to do. Anyway, any more scandals you want to reveal this week, or should we end, go over and have a nice weekend and count our money or something?
I think that might be it. I think we're probably scandaled out.
Well, I think I'm scandaled out. We can go and check our tax returns, make sure we haven't left 2.3 million quid somewhere.
I've already put the tax return in, just want to say.
Yeah, you didn't forget that random couple of million quid or something.
No, sadly not. Although my company had a very good year.
Good. So I'm pleased to hear it. Let's end on a positive note. Thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying the show, do share it with people. Drop us a message on Facebook or Twitter, either our personal Twitters or HOC podcast on Twitter. We'd love you to follow us, share the show, drop us a line what you think of the stories we're covering, what stories you'd like us to cover. Emma, where can people keep up with you?
I'm at @EmmaBurnell_ on Twitter, and I have a Substack, which is Hard Thinking on the Soft Left.
And I'm at Charlotte A. Henry on Twitter. If you go to theaddition.substack.com, you can see a bunch of the other stuff I'm doing there. Thank you once again for listening, and we'll see you all next week.